This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's 5 at 5 with Molly and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Molly Hall. 5 at 5 with Molly and Hall starts now.
Where does last night's Cubs loss rank in a season full of bad losses?
Well, it's a terrible loss. It's really bad. It's a really bad one. And I would say it's number one right now because recency bias, because of where you're at in terms of this season. The idea that you could have won a game and picked up a complete game on the Cardinals, and instead you let them take another day off the calendar. That's what's really damning about that. You'd never want to see walks. You never want to see three walks in a row. You never want to see a guy walk in the winning run. So, and I mean, the idea that that was the umpire was being tough on him, he wasn't close. There was no strike zone. In the immortal words of Les, he was in San Diego. Those pitches were in Tijuana. And I laughed at that this morning. Yes,
one of his better lines.
Yes. It was just pretty. It was pretty awful. So, unfortunately, you wasted. You make a comeback. You wasted the return of Chris Bryant. You wasted a couple of homers from Jay Hay too. And I got to tell you, you wasted an opportunity to not only stay ahead of the Brewers, who don't scare you as much without Yelich. Let's be honest,
they don't.
But you missed a chance to.
You're right.
You're going to play this team a lot, 7 times here. But are you really going to be able to pick up 4 games while doing that? 2 sounds like that's more reasonable. 3 would have been much better this morning, but 4 seems rough.
It feels like the worst because it's the latest, but it feels familiar because you've had so many, if that makes sense. Because you look at the Cubs' list of tough losses to take, it's a long one, and you don't know where this one fits. I don't think it's as bad as the Pennsylvania walk-offs. I think the back-to-back nights in Philly.
That's a beautiful dance, too.
And that's what it is. You walk off. See. Hey, you put a little funny little hat and little do-si-do.
Off you go, off the dance floor.
The Pennsylvania walk-offs. That, to me, was the low point of the season. You had to recover from there. Last night, you still have a 1-game lead over a team in the Brewers that you feel like might be done because of everything that they've had to absorb, and now they have to go on without Yelich. You give them a lot of credit. Maybe they're not done. Maybe this will find they'll find a way. I do think that the Cubs, this is as frustrating as any. I don't think as devastating as any, because it's frustrating. It reminded you of what they haven't been and haven't had in the bullpen. And, Cshek takes the blame for this because obviously he walked 3 hitters. And, Joe Maddon watching this, I think he didn't do this on purpose or for effect, but it underscored how limited his options are in the bullpen. Because who was better? I mean, you got to go to somebody else.
Joe said he's a ground ball pitcher, so you could get the double play. Like, you're playing for the double play there is basically what Joe,
you are.
How he defended it.
And he just missed the strike zone. He was nibbling, but I don't think it was an umpire's fault. So I would think this is in the top 5, maybe in the top 4. There's others that come to mind. Heck, Cshek lost a game like this back in April against the Braves, I believe. So it's a long list. This one's top 5.
It's the place in the season. It really ruins it.
It is a long list because the back end of the bullpen has been so unreliable and so streaky, so up and down. But given the fact that we are in mid-September now, and if you still want to look at the divisional race, I mean, I guess technically they're still in it, but I think if you were a Cubs fan, you're probably focused more on the wild card right now, and the fact that Milwaukee and Philadelphia both won last night in conjunction with this loss makes it hurt a little bit more. The worst three losses I can remember are the Harper Grand Slam in Philly, Pittsburgh on the 3rd of July with Wilson Contreras in right field. That was a Craig Kimbrel game.
That was Kimbrel, yeah.
And then Keston Hira in Milwaukee, I believe about a month back as well, another Craig Kimbrel implosion in the 9th inning.
You have some Kimbrel bias, though. I think you're forgetting the Pittsburgh one.
I have no bias. Okay. The guy's brutal. I mean, if he was in the game last night, it wouldn't even have gotten to the 10th inning. They would have probably put that one away a lot earlier. But the fact of the matter is that, no, it's not on Joe Maddon. And I know he is an easy target, and he will continue to be scapegoated, and he's probably not going to come back next season. And that's already kind of been laid out. But, I mean, Quintana could only give you three innings last night.
Right.
That's on him. You went through Chatwood, Kinsler, Kyle Ryan, Phelps, Rowan Wick gave you two innings.
Rowan Wick was good.
Rowan Wick has been good pretty much all season long since he's emerged. But what are you to do if you are Joe Maddon? This is your bullpen, and you've got Brandon Morrow, who hasn't pitched all year. You've got Craig Kimbrel, who's on the IL, who I don't think will probably pitch again all year, all things considered. I don't know if they want him to pitch again the way he's been throwing the ball. But it is up there in terms of a bad loss. And, Mully, to your point, you're absolutely right, given the fact that we're in September now. The games mean a little bit more now, then they seem like they mean more now than they do earlier in the year. So this is right up there in the pantheon of famous or maybe infamous Cubs losses of 2019.
That is correct. I totally agree with that. It's absolutely near the top because of the stakes. The stakes are much higher right now. Yes, the Pennsylvania walk-off dance, that hurt. That was bad. Those are a bad couple of nights, and especially the Harper walk-off particularly stung just because of the fashion in which you lost the game there. But anytime you give one away like that, anytime you walk a guy in and give the team the win, hand the win off on a platter like that, it's bad. And you had a chance to get another win. I mean, this is what the road Cubs do that is especially frustrating. It seems like they'll win a first game in the series and then drop the other two or drop the other three. And you cannot afford to do that when your goal is the World Series, and you especially can't do that when now we're looking at these wild card standings now as maybe the only hope for the Cubs for a postseason run, which is not great. So this is near the top, and it's again frustrating. Another frustrating road Cubs loss.
Yeah, I had been set on that July 3rd one because of just the moment and everything, because of it was such a roller coaster. Last night was a roller coaster too, though. As you guys have meant, they battled back from down 6-2. Quintana puts them in a hole. Bryant with the home runs, Mully, you mentioned, right? I mean, that was, you didn't expect that. He talked about after the game, he loves hitting in San Diego. And
remember the All-Star game? Remember, right. 2016, he hit a homer off Sale?
Right. I do.
Yeah, it was great.
And
same park.
The Cardinals lost, and you could have got that's just it. And four, you know, obviously, four is more than three, but with seven games left, three or two and a half seems like a possibility. Four and a half seems like this Mount Everest. And I know it's just one game, but it just seems like a huge obstacle. Plus the fact that you get the news that Yelich is out, but the Brewers still won. The Phillies won. I guess the D-backs lost. So, I mean, there's a little bit of a mixed bag. And again, you weren't going to necessarily win the game, but it's just the way. Walking in it's the Padres. They're playing for nothing. So, it's last night because it's the most recent.
That's a pretty easy question to answer.
What do you make of Scott Boras discussing the free agent plan for Nick Castellanos? How big a priority is he for the Cubs? And where would you place him in order, above or behind who? Will the White Sox pursue him or be scared off by Boras?
I know he's Scott Boras. I know this is what he does. I know when the Cubs play in Southern California that you got to have a Scott Boras moment and he holds court. But you know what? Stop talking. You got your client's in the midst of a pennant race. This should be all about the team, not about the me. This is not about free agency. This is a guy who has carried the Cubs. Good, congratulations, Nick Castellanos. You are a welcome addition to the North Side. You have done everything right. You can have picnics in Wrigley Field with your kids. This is terrific. You fit in well. You fit in like another hotel in Wrigleyville. Great. Welcome aboard. But have your agent shut up. Because
the Nicholas.
This is not the time to do that. This is not the time to talk about your market value. And he's doing a disservice to Castellanos by making it seem like this is a guy who wants to start talking about next year already. This year still matters. You're in the midst of a pennant race. You need to win every game, and this just detracts the focus when you have your agent saying things like, never ask an artist how paint is made. Okay, deep thoughts with Scott Boras, stop already. Every time this guy opens his mouth, I understand that this is for performance value and it's entertainment value. But you know what? The circus can come to town soon enough. We don't need it now.
He said, and I'm talking about Scott Boras, my ideal of exclusivity is to kind of listen to everybody you can listen to, and then Nick can make his decision. That's not exclusivity. No, no. You ought to look up that word, because my ideal of exclusivity is not the definition of the word. It's a completely opposite word.
Please define monogamy for me, Scott Boras.
Exactly. Okay. That's insane. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, when you look at the numbers, Boras was trying to battle that idea a little bit. Castellanos is, if you look at his numbers, he's basically not doing spectacularly on the year. I mean, as great as he's been for
according
the Cubs,
according to his WAR,
right. he's just another outfielder. He's not anything particularly special, and yet he seems so special because he's so different than what they have here. So, you know, look, the Cubs' priority has to be Chris Bryant, and they have to figure out what they're doing with Baez, and they need to concentrate on their starting pitching. It'd be great to have Castellanos back, but no, he doesn't hit the top three of what their offseason priorities have to be. It's just as simple as that. He's not, unfortunately, in that exclusive, if you will, group. So, I don't think he's a high priority for the Sox. I don't know that they're necessarily scared off by Boras, but I think that they would prefer not to be involved in that sort of negotiation if indeed he's talking to every human known to man. And that's apparently what
exclusively
the man's doing.
Talking to every human.
Ridiculous.
On an exclusive basis. The thing with Castellanos and his wins above replacement this year, that's obviously it's a cumulative stat. And
sure,
the boost he's had here in Chicago, I mean, 14 home runs for the Cubs in just 37 games, where he had 11 for the Tigers in 100 games. The OPS in Detroit, 790. The OPS here, 1046. So we're all kind of infected by recency bias in that regard and how hot he's been lately. Maybe he likes hitting in Wrigley. Maybe he likes Chicago. Maybe he likes, you know, being in a pennant race. I don't know what has affected him. Maybe it's a contract year type situation, which we see a lot as well. As far as Scott Boras, you know, as long as people hate Scott Boras, that means he's doing his job really well, and he's getting a lot of money for his clients, and he will continue to do so. So I don't begrudge him. I mean, the grammar stuff, you know, that's unforgivable, obviously. But I don't, you know, the weird stuff that he says and the, you know, pictures that he paints and everything. I would love Nick Castellanos in a White Sox uniform. We talked about it a little bit yesterday about how they have not been able to find a designated hitter since what Jim Thome has been around about a decade ago.
I can't wait to read the booklet.
Yes, the booklet
he
will
puts
be
together
lovely,
it's like a real
it?
Estate thing. He puts together a little booklet on every particular client.
I can wait.
The White Sox should be pursuing him. They should be pursuing JD Martinez. They should be pursuing anybody that can swing a bat as well as these guys can that are established that will hopefully be available. As far as the Cubs, though, I think their priority has to be starting pitching, which might be a little bit of a concern because John Lester looks, you know, done like dinner. Kyle Hendricks, you can probably rely on. But then Darvish, you got to still call him a question mark going forward, even this year, been very up and down. And then Quintana, you know, you're not exactly depending on him as a number one or a two starter either. He's more of a back end guy, I think, probably in that division. So for the Cubs, I think going forward, it's more pitching-wise that they should focus on more so than their offense, even though, you know, probably going to have to tinker with that as well.
I don't make much out of this because this is Scott Boras doing Scott Boras things. This is what he does. He's a salesman. I get it. This is not the time for it. I don't personally care what Scott Boras has to say, although he can be entertaining at times. I mean, there was the whole Arrieta quote with the squirrel. I can't remember exactly what it is, but it was memorable.
He's a big squirrel with a lot of nuts.
I didn't want to mix that up there. So, yeah, I mean,
he's a big nut who's kind of squirrely,
something like that. Yeah. So
Jake Arrieta he's a big squirrel with a lot of nuts in his trees.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Kevin. There it is. So, I mean, he should be a priority, just not the biggest priority. Because when you look at WAR, who are your WAR leaders? It's Chris Bryant. It's Javi Baez, both with the 4.3 WAR. Those are the guys you need to focus on. Those are the guys that are the priority. But I think he's on your list of guys you should bring back, despite the WAR that dictates that he's an average player. And I get why Scott Boras would say you don't ask an artist how he paints or whatever the quote is. Yeah, I get that. I get that because it's average. But I want to see Castellanos back. I think he should be a priority, just not as big as Baez and Bryant. And should the White Sox pursue him? Sure. I don't think they should be scared off by Boras or anybody. I think he would be a good player to bring on to your team if you're the White Sox. But personally, I would like to see him stay with the Cubs.
I also wonder how much Boras is doing his own client a disservice by looking at this that way, because Castellanos on the Cubs makes him comfortable. Castellanos being comfortable makes him a better player. What's he going to do if he's unhappy again and he's longing to be back in Chicago?
He probably thinks he's putting some sort of pressure on the Cubs, which I doubt they feel any pressure about it.
Well, as the song goes, WAR, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Put me in line with those that don't care about WAR.
Say it again.
Here's the thing. Like, I don't like the timing of Scott Boras, and I get that Scott's trying to do his job, but can he not afford a plane ticket to Chicago? Wouldn't this have had a bigger impact at, like, 4 o'clock in the afternoon behind the batting cages at Wrigley Field?
It's a long flight, man.
As opposed to... 9 o'clock Chicago time or 8 o'clock, whatever time it was. I'm saying there was, five out of town writers, maybe four covering.
Did you
the
see
team.
The team Boras circled around bigger, Castellanos
bigger,
pregame?
Bigger than the Chicago media covering the game.
It was.
So the impact, yeah. there's no national media at that game, right? You might have some national people. You might have had some White Sox people come over to Wrigley Field, let's say, because of the fact that the Sox should be involved in any conversation with Scott Boras and Nick Castellanos. I think it's a really good point, though. The other thing is Nick has almost said how comfortable and great it is to play in Chicago. Here's the other thing, though. Play for Joe Maddon. Okay, how big of a factor will that be? Play for Joe Maddon, future White Sox manager. So is that a thing? So is that why Boras is doing this now, to build that wall up, to not make it like his client is all in on the Cubs? And should he be the priority? He should be 1A or number 2. I mean, listen, they need a starting pitcher. They need a starting pitcher.
They need
an ace. They might need a couple, but they need an ace. They need somebody they can really, really trust. Psst, Garrett Cole.
Did you see Scott Boras was building a wall? I thought the wall was already being built.
IFearChina.com.
That was a great question, and I appreciate it.
I also thought Mexico was supposed to pay.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Who are you comparing Nico Horner to this morning? Would you start him ahead of Addison Russell when forced to make that decision?
I am not comparing him to any Hall of Famers this morning, and that is not an insult to him. I think Babe Ruth had a bad day, if I'm not mistaken.
Chief.
The issue with him is power. It's not nothing but power, right? Does he have, will he grow into power? I'm talking about the long-term projections of him. It's still so early. I don't think anyone's figured out how to pitch him yet. And I think that I would keep him and let him have a little bit of a run. I would not rush Addison Russell back into the lineup. I would keep Horner out there. I'd give him... let's see what he can do. Let's see what happens with him. Let's see if he can have another one of those games that he had. I don't think it was his fault that anything went awry yesterday. I thought he did fine, but it wasn't Rhino. We're not talking about that this morning.
Looking forward to talking to Jim Callis, 8 o'clock. He knows minor league baseball. He can make a good comp for us,
sure,
because I think we got a little carried away. The name Ian Kinsler comes up sometimes when you're comparing Horner and projecting him out. He's had a long major league career. Not been a Hall of Fame caliber, been an all-star type player. I don't know if that's appropriate or not, but look, Nico Horner had a more typical night last night in the majors than his debut, which was outstanding.
You want him to play a good shortstop. Let's be honest
about
it.
He's going to.
He's not. You know, he is the headline that Mark Gonzalez wrote here. They don't want him to be the savior. So, again.
Spark, not savior.
Thank you, David.
Spark, not savior.
I like that.
We'll stay with that. And I think when you look at his ability to play defense, you want him to solidify the middle infield because they got guys throwing the ball all over.
Yeah.
Zobrist and Addison Russell. There's no reason why he shouldn't play the rest of the season every game. Because number one, if you've already started the clock. So
yes.
If he's going to be your opening day second baseman next year, he benefits from the experience. And if he's not, then you know. And I just think if he's going to be good, then he's going to give you a spark the rest of the way. Keep him in the lineup. As far as Addison Russell is concerned, look, you want him to come back from the concussion. You want him to go through the protocol. You want him to be healthy. But I would look at it and say, okay, this is how you can tell Addison Russell is healthy and in past concussion protocol. Give him a paper, put three letters on it, and if he can read it, then he's fine. DFA.
Wow.
Wow. Don't disagree with
that's
that.
That's pretty good.
You might be long overdue, granted, or taking into account his performance or his lack of performance and all of the offseason headaches and dumb things that he has said and done during his tenure. So I wouldn't object to that.
But you might want to wait until Baez comes back. I don't know.
Okay, might be a little harsh.
So, what, that was 2020.
I mean, I think it was a great moment for you.
Harsh,
but it might have been. I don't know that it makes perfect baseball sense.
The Cubs are probably only going to be playing for a few more weeks now, so I don't think Javi Baez is walking back through that door. And we know with concussions, it's a very unpredictable thing. There's no guarantee that Addison Russell really will even be back before the end of the season. They have a little bit more depth now up the middle, even without those two guys available right now with Horner. I guess Tony Kemp is still technically on the roster. You've got Ben Zobrist there who showed his age maybe a little bit with his defensive liability in that game last night, but he's still going to provide a little bit of a spark offensively. I don't know who I'm comparing Nico Horner to at this point. It's not Craig Biggio. It's not Ryan Sandberg. It might not even be Ian Kinsler. I mean, Ian Kinsler was hitting 35, 40 home runs a year there for a little while.
Yeah,
I don't know if Horner's got that kind of power. He might be more of a gap hitter, more of a doubles guy, but certainly a well-rounded player from the looks of things. And even though it has been a small sample size, two games, about as small as you can get, but I can't really say that anything but good things with what we've seen, granted in a limited capacity. But if you are a Cubs fan right now, I think you have been very impressed with Nico Horner and the fact that he, as a first-round pick, I struggle to call him a sure thing already when we've seen bursts sure. like this from many first-round picks in the past, whether it's Schwarber, Almora, Ian Happ, whomever. But so far, so good for Horner. That's all I can say about it.
If you had asked me this question yesterday, I would not have been one of the guys that threw out the name of Sandberg or Biggio, but if you can ask me for a name today, after yesterday, if you're asking me for a name, I'm going to say Daniel Descalso. I don't want to be too harsh.
Oh,
I don't want to be too harsh,
wow.
though. It's
Boy,
a
Ray,
second
I thought
game.
I was harsh. That's
yeah.
harsh.
I mean, it's a second game. I'm not going to be too high on the guy yesterday. I'm not going to be too low on the guy today. I mean, it's a second game, and I think there's reason to have some high hope for the kid, and I want to see more. And I want to see him improve. I mean, we're in the last little stretch of the season here. I want to see some good things, and I think he could provide them. I think hopefully there will be less of performances like yesterday and more like his debut. Hoping for that. Starting him ahead of Addison Russell, I'm all about that because Addison Russell, look, I have a bias. I've voiced my bias against Addison Russell throughout the season, but despite that, unequivocally, there's been a lack of focus from Addison Russell sure. when he's on the field. And that's even when he's come back after that minor league stint again. So, yeah, start him ahead of Addison Russell. Start that when he comes back. Keep that going.
Well, that's just, Ray, there you go. And by the way, everybody, 5 at 5 is brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the weight, download the new Sport Clips haircut app, and check in. The only person you need to be worried about today comparing him to is Addison Russell. Okay? And it's Addison Russell. The other key to this, right, is Addison Russell at shortstop. We're not necessarily Addison Russell at second. Because here, you know, Ben Zobrist has made some errors. Now, granted, he's kind of solidified the top of the order. He's getting on base. But does that outweigh
he may have
what
hurt
he's
himself.
Doing on defense, right? And let's, you know, another question. as far as answering this question, right now I only compare him to Addison Russell. But maybe I compare him to Ben Zobrist as 1A. It's Russell and Zobrist. And would you rather have an infield going down the stretch of Addison Russell and Nico Hoerner and have Zobrist be the first guy off the bench?
That's interesting.
Your pinch hitter.
Yeah.
Right? Is that better?
Defensively.
Defensively, but
not,
it for
not
sure
if you've
is.
DFA'd Addison Russell.
That's right.
What a stupid question that is. What a stupid question.
How will Christian Yelich's season-ending knee injury change the race in the National League Central or for the second wild card spot? And are the Brewers done?
Just terrible news. You never like to see a guy that good go down at this point of the season. It's bad for baseball. You feel for Yelich because he's really, as much as he is a rival of the Cubs, he's a superstar you can support. There's a lot of things I like about Christian Yelich on and off the field. So just terrible news last night to see him go down. Look, I don't know that I would count the Brewers out. I think I've done that before. I think we need to be respectful of the fact they've got a pretty crafty manager. They've got a pretty gritty bullpen. They've got a lot of reasons to not count them out. And they have, you know, they replace Yelich with Trent Grisham last night. And the night before, Grisham, I think, set a rookie record with 5 hits in a game. And they got Moustakas coming back from an injury. They've got guys that have been in this position before, just a year ago when they went crazy in September and did everything that you thought they couldn't do. So I don't think that they can catch the Cubs. I don't know that it, you know, there's going to be the Cubs that they're catching maybe. Maybe it's the Phillies. Maybe it's the Diamondbacks. But I wouldn't necessarily declare them DOA either because of this injury. It is really bad, and it is a gut punch. But somehow, this is a pretty resilient bunch up in Milwaukee.
I think that there is the possibility when a guy goes down, a guy the value and as good as Christian Yelich, that everyone will lift their game and they will have a good week. That's my hope because, of course, they got the Cardinals coming up here for a series. So you would think that there is a possibility, and this would be best case scenario for the Cubs, that the Brewers get their act together and that they take care of the Cardinals. But it's not sustainable without Christian Yelich. So my feeling is that the Brewers are indeed done, but the Brewers will have this kind of hiccup, if you will. They'll have this little bit of a moment where, oh my God, we can do it without him. And then after a week, they'll be like, oh my God, we can't do it without him. So there'll be an initial push, and hopefully that takes care of the Cardinals. And then they fade away and they're done, so don't worry about them.
Well, David, you're right about the Brewers. They do have some depth offensively. When you look at Moustakas, Grandal, Hura, Eric Thames, Braun, you know, they can go a little bit deep in that lineup. But Christian Yelich is just, he's been on a completely different planet the last 2 seasons. I mean, his last 2 years are what everybody thought Bryce Harper was supposed to be. When you look at the fact that he's hit 80 home runs, scored 218 runs, driven in 207 runs, 416 on base percentage in Milwaukee during his tenure there. So I'm not going to rule them out because they do have a little bit of depth, and their bullpen, the back end of the bullpen is pretty sharp with Hader and whatnot there. But it's going to be a real, real struggle. I think if you looked at any team in the race, this could be the one player that any team could afford to lose the least.
Yelich going down is devastating, absolutely, and the pitching is the exact other reason I think this the Brewers have issues, because they rely way too much on that bullpen, they rely way too much on Hader, they wear out the pen, and that's not sustainable. That is not sustainable, and especially not in the postseason. And so I think the Brewers are done. I think this is the nail in the coffin for them.
Doesn't the great Wayne Larrabee say something like, there's your dagger, right? That's what that is. I mean, unfortunately, it is. And the other reason is, we talk about Cubs and Cardinals having 7. Cubs and Brewers are done, right? They don't play head-to-head anymore. So you don't get that full game effect, right? It's only half games at a time. So it'll be interesting to see. I suspect they'll be okay today. They are still playing the Marlins, right? The Brewers are playing the Marlins. But if they sulk today, right? If they sulk today, you're going to kind of know that they're really done. if they kind of try to rally around it, but I don't know if they have the bodies really to rally around it. So I'm not expecting much. And it is bad for baseball. I mean, this guy was having an unbelievable season, and on the surface, it appears that he's doing it the right way, right? He doesn't seem like a steroid guy.
Handsome, too.
Yeah.
I wasn't checking him out, Kev. You got that ESPN body issue next to your war and flip and dip and chip and whip and all that other garbage you subscribe to.
Well, I think that's a great question, and for us, it's pretty easy.
Bears defensive coaches went out of their way to point out how many plays Khalil Mack disrupted despite not having a sack. Mack deleted a tweet after he circled a Green Bay media story on the success of the Packers' offensive tackles. Did Mack have a bad opener, and what do you expect from him in Denver?
Listen, Mack didn't have a bad opener. Mack was a guy that they were obsessed with blocking. Mack is one of the great players in the NFL. I expect that people will go after him and they'll try to shut him down. And, again, that's why I never thought he was going to set a sacks record this year. But I think that Khalil Mack is a great player, and he will always be a force to be reckoned with, and he is the guy that you worry about. I think the Bears coaches ought to knock it off. Like, don't go making excuses for something that doesn't need excuses.
It's ridiculous to me to think that anyone would watch that tape and think that Khalil Mack had a bad game. There's no way that that's true. He disrupted the offensive line, he made things more difficult. And so, yeah, he definitely is not coming off a bad game. He just didn't have a sack. That happens in football. That's okay. He did not have a bad opener. As far as going to Denver, look, they're playing with a backup offensive tackle. They've got an immobile quarterback. They're at the scene of the game where Khalil Mack came out as a superstar in the NFL in 2015 with five, count them, 5 sacks. And now the Bears defense is going in there needing this game badly. What do I expect? Pain.
Khalil Mack doesn't have many bad games, period. And I don't think he played poorly on Thursday. I think it looked like the Packers' game plan was stop Khalil Mack at all costs, and we can live with what the rest of the front seven provides. So you saw Leonard Floyd have a pretty good game. You saw some other players contribute because the focus was so much on Mack. And that's actually one of the good things that he does, is draw so much attention to open up opportunities for other players. So listen, I know it was a bad loss. I know the Bears are getting killed after the fact, but you don't want to hear this from the coaches. You don't want to hear excuse making after just 0-1. You don't want to hear this. It's one of the things I can't stand about the Cubs these past few years. It's the schedule. It's this. It's that. You don't want the Bears to become the excuse makers, because we know what excuses are like, and we know that we don't need any more of them.
Look, Mack had a quiet game statistically, not a bad game. That's all it was. It's gonna happen on occasion. I will say, my spicy hot preseason take of 21 sacks for Mack now is in danger, because you're gonna have to start off with the sack at least.
That was spicy hot, Ray.
It really was. So it's cooling off. I'm cooling it off now.
He may
down.
Get 21 against Joe Flacco.
Maybe, and I do expect a big game from him in Denver. Absolutely.
Now, if you're into sacks and if you're into offensive linemen, defensive linemen, if you go to training camp to watch those one-on-one battles, if you go back and look at Mack versus Bacchiardi, okay, all night Thursday night, like that's offensive line, defensive line porn, if you're into that kind of thing. You just watch that over and over. That kick step that guy's got, okay, unbelievable, the way he forces guys. But again, Mack had a good game, okay? 94 had a decent game, too. But a couple of his sacks were because of the pressure that Mack provided, and the quarterback ran into the arms of 94. So don't get too crazy on how great 94 was. Oh, well, he had 2.5, 3 sacks, and Mack had nothing. Mack was very, very good, and I'm sure he was held on many, many plays, as many offensive linemen are every single game.
All righty, that is the 5 at 5, 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.